Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Captain Vanya O. Hi, Vanya. Welcome back.
Hi. Great to be back.
I'm so happy to be talking to you again. Now, you were on, the first time you were on, it was almost at the very beginning of season seven. And now we're here, here we are at the season finale for season eight. So it's been almost two whole years since we have recorded together. Time flies when you're living under corrupt oligarchies. But I've been so excited to have you back. So I'm just really thrilled. Now, the one big change in terms of your relationship with this show is, of course, when you were on the first time, Mike Farrell did not know you exist. And now he does.
That's still crazy. Sometimes I remember that and I go, what?
I was so excited to send him those pictures of the signs you made for your MASH group. And so so jazzed. I was like, I can't wait to share this with him. He was like, oh, yeah, that's so sweet. Like, and then he's like, pirate on the show, Anya. It's all good. So.
every time there's a conversation about like piracy and just like the general impact on society, it kind of has, I always bring that up.
We got official approval from BJ Honeycutt himself. It's all good. Well, again, it's been a little, we've been keeping up with each other on MASH Player. So I'm really thrilled to have you back on the show. It's just great. I really enjoyed our episode together. And so I'm happy to have you here for the season. Again, the season finale of the eighth season of MASH, April Fools, the 25th episode of the series, long season. It originally aired on March 24th, 1980. It was written by Dennis Koenig and directed by Charles S. Dubin. So, Vondi, we already know your origin, so we can get right into the episode.
Yep.
It's almost April Fool's Day, so Hawkeye, BJ, and Winchester are getting into the spirit by pulling pranks. Potter puts the kibosh on all the tomfoolery when he learns that the 477th is about to be inspected by Colonel Tucker, a fire-breathing, Army regulation-quoting martinet who, according to Potter, picks his teeth with a rusty nail. Klinger, sensing an opportunity, decides to pull a scam where he'll act like the perfect soldier, dress uniform and all, and then go into full crazy mode, hoping that that'll earn him a Section 8. Going against Potter's direct orders, Hawkeye, BJ, and Winchester get back at Margaret after she pranks them all by removing all the canvas from her tent, leaving everything else untouched. Margaret returns to the swamp to protest, where waiting for her in Hawkeye's cot is a skeleton which elicits a scream. The swamp rats laugh in delight, causing a pillow fight which spills out into the compound, right into the path of the oncoming Colonel Tucker, who was not amused. He berates them all, including Potter. The only person he's impressed with is, of course, Klinger, who shows up in his dress uniform with a copy of Stars and Stripes under his arm, ready to direct Tucker to the VIP tent. The next day, Tucker has nothing but criticism for the medical staff, hurling insults and sarcasm when they protest his lack of respect for their efforts. At post-op, he goes further by insulting Margaret, who is trying to see his side of things, saying, "I hardly need the support of a woman." After a confrontation outside, Tucker puts them all in report and then tells them all that he plans to bar them from all medical service and have them court-martialed. It's at this moment that Klinger does the switcheroo, dressing as Cleopatra while working in his office. Tucker is horrified that the only good man here has been broken by the 477th. Potter can't believe Tucker is falling for this, and they go off to Potter's office to argue about it. Meanwhile, in the swamp, Hawkeye, BJ, Margaret, and Winchester decide that if we're going to get busted, they might as well go out in style, pulling off one giant prank on Tucker. In the Oak Club, they set it up so Tucker asks for his trademark shot in a beer, which gets him dumped with a bucket of beer from the rafters. Tucker is apocalyptic, red-faced with rage. He screams at Hawkeye, collapsing onto the bar and then onto the floor. Everyone is stunned, thinking they've brought on a heart attack. The O Club goes silent, and Tucker asks for Hawkeye. As Hawkeye gets in close, he whispers, "April Fools." Hawkeye, confused, looks at everyone. Then Tucker bolts up from the floor, arm in arm with Potter, laughing hysterically. Turns out this was an April Fool's plot hatched by the two of them weeks in advance, pulled off with perfection. Potter bet that if he pushed the staff hard enough, Hawkeye and the rest would pull a giant stunt like this, and they would fall for it like a school of hungry carp. Later, in the O Club, Potter and Tucker, who have been friends since World War I, talk about the other pranks they've pulled and how they've also managed to fool Klinger this time, too. Right on cue, Klinger walks in, still dressed as Cleopatra, asking when he and Tucker are leaving camp. Everyone else breaks up into laughter, promoting Klinger to ask, "What's so funny?" All right, Vanya, this is April Fool's. Before we get into the episode, I want to ask you, I think I've made it clear in previous episodes, I do not like pranks. I don't like April Fool's. Is nothing. I don't pull them. I don't like them, and I don't think they're funny. Where are you on that? Is that anything that you and your friends engage with?
I feel like the last time I pranked anyone or like was subjected to a prank was when I was like 10.
Okay.
And yeah, very quickly that's like stopped being something that happens in my life. I feel like pranks could be fun in a sense, like if you know the person and if you can sort of predict their reaction and if it's not like mean, I feel like it could be really funny.
I feel like if it's with kids, right, below a certain age, yes, there's a kind of sweet innocence to it. But I feel like once adults get involved, then it has the potential to get really mean very quickly, you know? And that's where now again, I understand in the pressure cooker that is the 477th.
I
Everyone
mean,
needs an outlet, so I get it. But it just, it. I don't. I luckily don't have that. Live in that scenario. So in real life, it's like, can we just? To me, it's all just about fooling somebody, and that's kind of easy to do, especially in this stage where you never know what the hell is true and what isn't. It's
that's
kind of like it's
true.
shooting fish in a barrel, you know, kind of in that regard.
It's kind of, I feel like a good prank should be funny and it should like make sense for the person that you're pranking. And it should be like silly. Like I think the sillier the prank, the funnier it is, just because like if it's outlandish enough that like I can't believe you fall for that, that it's not even doesn't you don't even feel bad afterwards if
Yes.
like you fell for something like that. But I do love
Yes.
the pranks in the context of the show. I feel
Yes.
like that's
Like
that's just great.
the opening ones in the opening scene, which is in the scrub room, where they give, you know, BJ has brought the treats from Peg, and it's all stuff geared towards each individual person. Like it's, you know, he gives Hawkeye like a brownie mix or whatever, and he gives Potter these peaches. And then of course he pulls out the can of pralines, which Winchester lunges for because he knows that Winchester loves pralines. And of course Winchester opens it and it's spring loaded and that thing shoots out and whatever. And it's, you know, everyone laughs. It's a couple of seconds. It's very silly. And it is, as you just say, sort of predicated on the fact that they know that Winchester loves pralines. He's going to go for it. And it's all over. So, like, that's fine, you know, because it's just silly and stupid, but it's not meant to feel stupid. And then, of course, I love Winchester's reaction is the worst part about this is that there are no pralines.
I love that line. And also I love the little moment of BJ clapping like a little kid when Charles gets scared. That's just that's so lovely to me. He's so delighted with himself.
I like that for while they're laughing, which of course is where your eye is drawn, you see Winchester and he's like literally like clutching his chest because he was so surprised by it. And it's, you know, it's very funny if you say that because like this is not a prank. It's not remotely a prank, but I literally just had the same experience because just a couple of hours ago, before this very recording that we're making, we were sleeping and our dog Pippa had to go out for a walk. Very rarely does she need to do that, but she did this time. And so I was asleep. I heard her jump off the bed. She's 75 pounds. So I heard, ba-dum, you know, that woke me up. And I woke up, I looked out and I saw that my wife was not in the bed with me. And I thought, oh, she's already up getting like she's, you know, Pippa must have woke her up and she's getting ready to walk her. And I got, but I bolted up. And what I did not know is that my wife was in the closet with the lights off. And so she came out of the darkness and I was like, ah! jumped up. And she was not trying to scare me, but I thought she was out in the kitchen because I thought that's where the light were. But like, I did the same thing Winchester just did, where I was like, I was just like, okay, I just aged about an hour and a half in that 5 seconds or whatever. So, okay.
Yes.
So Potter, of course, is playing the long game. Because
Yeah.
he now he would normally kind of laugh at this, right? He would just kind of or not he wouldn't get angry. This is if you're watching an episode, if you're watching this episode, you might be a little like, wow, why is Potter so like kind of like down on this? You know, he isn't normally this way. And of course, we're going to learn it's because he's setting the trap by,
Yeah.
you know, already by, you know, acting like, oh, no, there will be no pranks. And he even says, you know, on my fall was arming at my Farmer's Almanac says it's only like the end of March. And then, of course, the doctors are like, well, we can't contain April Fool's just to one day. And Potter is like, no, there will be none of that. And he actually hands Hawkeye back the peaches, which I thought is kind of a funny little guy. He
Yeah.
just kind of hands them back. And then he's like, I will not be. And then he does take them back in a second. And he says, by the way, I've seen them all. I will not be the victim of these. And we see that they've pinned like a raccoon tail, which used to be an old
Yeah.
thing, to his uniform and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, that feels like a pretty harmless prank compared to the even the minnows in Margaret's I think it was her coat.
So, like in her pocket or
Yeah.
something like that, because she's like
Yeah, I
there were dead minnows, and Winchester says they were alive when I put them there,
Yeah.
which is.
That always felt like a bit worse than the others because like that's an animal I think
Yeah, I know.
a live one
Don't harm the minnows. That's not. Yeah, but
they died
where did he even get them? Where the hell do you get minnows? And in the
right
middle of like where did Winchester like fish them out of the river? Like where the hell did he even get them from? But okay. But so
yeah.
we've established the pattern here of the episode, the framework of the episode where Potter is like, there will be no jokes. This is completely, you know, and he hasn't even, you know, the whole news supposedly about Tucker coming isn't even here yet. But
Yeah.
he's saying, you know, look, everybody just kind of like chill out on the jokes. He goes to find Klinger in his office. And then we see that Mulcahy is getting roped into this as well because his clothes were taken and he was replaced by this house frog. And I love how I love when William Christopher when he gets mad, right? Because
Yeah.
it's so cute. Like he can't really he j you know he can't really summon the really murderous energy because he's just a gentle person. But I love that he gets all red faced and he's like
Yeah.
really picks up his fist and stuff. So I just like how just frustrated he gets at all of this because of course Klinger and Potter find it very funny.
Yes, I love that that's like his only scene in the entire episode.
Yeah,
Just him
he's
coming
barely in this
in.
one. Yeah.
Yeah, and also when he walks away and we hear the whistles off
Yep.
screen and he says like, "Oh, stuff it or something."
He
That's
says, "Oh, shut
I
up."
love
Yeah.
it. Yeah. I love that. I would whistle too, honestly.
off camera. As a you know amateur student of comedy, I do find off camera jokes almost always very funny, right?
Yeah.
Because you're just hearing the audio and you're picturing in your mind what that looked like, and that's why it's funny.
Yeah.
Is this you're kind of imagining everybody sitting in Jeeps whistling at Mulcahy, right at the apex of his rage and stuff. And so instead of being nice, oh, shut up. He's just so mad at them
Yeah.
all. So Potter reads this message that this guy Tucker is coming, and boy, does he play it up. Holy
Yeah.
hemostats! He says this guy's a real fire and brimstone guy, a stickler, quotes army regs, medical regs by memory. Picks his teeth with a rusty nail, especially the parts on courts martial. And then I love that Potter goes, I mean, Klinger goes, oh, sir, about that 3 day pass I just decided to ask for. That's just good. So
Yeah,
I like all that.
I really like Harry Morgan's performance in that because you know that Potter is acting, obviously, so he's like acting on top of acting, and he's really, really playing it up,
Yeah.
and I really like rewatching this episode just for that reason.
Yeah, once you know the gag, right? Once you know that this is all a plot, it is fun to watch Potter knowing that like the minute that like Klinger runs away and goes into the swamp to tell them what's going on, he must have just been laughing uncontrollably because they're all falling for it so hard. And that's what gives this episode an extra little jolt when you get to watch it later on. So anyway, Klinger goes to the swamp, tells the doctors. He sees Hawkeye wakes up and he finds that there's oatmeal in his boot. Again, that's the work of Margaret. Not really a great prank, really just kind of vandalism. It's sort of sloppy and whatever, but okay, that's fine. So Potter then has a meeting in his office and he's explaining to them all about this Tucker guy that's coming. We see that Hawkeye is not paying attention and he's sort of waving his boot in Margaret's face a little bit while Margaret is sitting there with this evil grin on her face. We see that Winchester is kind of smiling too. And I love that he's like, you guys all got this? And they're like, got it, got it, got it. And then he tells Hawkeye, and we see that Hawkeye is not even listening remotely, which, I don't know, it's a little rude. He even says, wait a minute, Pierce, are you Deef? I'm giving your hijinks the heave ho post haste. I love, he says, I'm the boss here. I can do that. Yeah, point that.
Yeah, I mean, none of them are kind of. I love that Margaret is also not paying attention until Potter addresses her, and her and Hawkeye just in the corner, like making faces at each other because he's also smiling at her, like he knows what she's done. I love that they're like over in the corner having a moment together. That's really fun.
Yeah, she would normally, of course, be following everything Colonel Potter is saying to the letter, but here she's not. And then she has this little thing where she says, she who laughs last, because she's obviously feels like she's won this contest because she got one last prank in under the deadline that Potter has just issued. And then that follows a scene that was always cut in syndication. This is something I never saw until the DVDs, where they walk out on the compound and Margaret is like 3 paces in front, and Hawkeye keeps talking about how he's going to get revenge. And Margaret, Loretta Swit, is partly out of focus because the camera is pointing at the three doctors, but you can see her and you can see that she's smiling ear to ear and she's got this kind of jaunty walk. She's kind of like, and it's a nice little bit of depth of field, is that you can see Margaret, she's out of focus, you can't exactly tell what's going to, but you see enough of it that you can get the body language. So I like that scene. I wish they hadn't cut any scenes, but I really kind of liked this little bit of directorial choice of having Margaret be out of focus a little, but knowing that she's so happy because she's like, hey, I got one in on Hawkeye and now the pranks are over, right? So she's won.
Yeah, she's so pleased with herself, and I really like Margaret in this episode in general because she obviously came very far from even season 7 in this regard, and is in like she's also in cahoots with the other guys. Like she's also doing stupid stuff and pranking, and obviously she's like, that's later in the episode, but she's trying to be more understanding of Tucker, but then she also like turns against him when he says the thing. So I like this episode as a moment of growth for Margaret, like for the character she's become in the final seasons. I feel like that's like the point where she kind of ended up, and there's not that much. There's some growth for her later with her father and with Klinger, but I feel like that's like the final evolution of her character. Like that's where it's sort of finished,
Yeah, the six
in
even
some
like
sense.
sixth season Margaret would not be going along with this. She would, she was still very uptight, but this Margaret is willing to do it, and it's nice to see that. So Winchester and BJ kind of beg off and say, no, look, Potter's told us no. I think Winchester even says like it's temporary jocus interruptus kind of thing, and Hawkeye berates them both, saying, "Hey, basically you guys are big jokemeisters, but now that it's been put on me, you're ready to give up." And he sort of badgers them into giving in, and then they finally say, "Okay, one more," and they head into the swamp because they decide, okay, we're going to get one more in on Margaret, even though Potter has expressly told us not to do that. So then Klinger goes to visit Rizzo in the motor pool. By the way, the motor pool setup, which we have like never seen before. Now we're seeing it like every fifth episode ever since we brought Rizzo onto the show. They've got the motor pool set up. He's telling Rizzo about Tucker coming, and then Rizzo is. This is like the first real bit where we get the character of Rizzo as he will be portrayed for the rest of the series. Because in the previous episode, he was sort of kind of like obsequious and sort of like frightened around Potter, afraid of getting yelled at. And then the one where he yells at Klinger about the bad turkeys is. You know, he's in bed the whole episode, but this is the beginning of where, okay, he's kind of not a scam artist, but he's clearly angling to do the least amount of work as possible. He's laying under a Jeep pretending he's working on it when he's asleep. So that's his character, right? He's always going to be kind of covered in grease, and he gives Klinger the advice of you never smile. The army hates to see a man grin, but if you look miserable, he says it thinks it makes it think they've failed somehow. But if you moan and groan and carry on, they leave you alone all to your lonesome. And so I like it's an interesting piece of advice that he's figured out that he's like, I don't like being here, but it's an easy gig. I don't have to work very hard. All I have to do is pretend to be this kind of person, and I just get to do what I want. And it's like, okay, Rizzo's kind of figured it out. What works for him?
I mean, yeah, I love that he says like, where else can you be a bum and get paid for it? That's a really good joke. I do not like Rizzo as a character, but I like that joke a lot and
Okay.
this scene in general.
Are you more, you're more a Zale woman?
I don't think I like either of them, if I'm
Okay.
being honest. Like I would trade Zale and Rizzo for two more nurses
Okay.
who are more fleshed out. I do not care for them. I'm sorry.
That's
I'm
fair. That's
sorry.
fair. That's totally fair, right? Because every minute Zale or Rizzo, that could have been Nurse Kelly getting more to do. So
Literally,
yeah,
yes.
that's true. That is true. They are not. I think obviously these are both Zale and Rizzo are stock comedy trope characters that you could use, you know, of just like, oh, the layabout sergeant or whatever. But yeah, I completely understand your point. It is kind of funny. Oh, go ahead.
I get why they're there, and
Yeah.
I know you couldn't easily replace at least some Rizzo parts with a nurse because that's just like a different role in the camp. Like it wouldn't be funny to see a lazy nurse. That's concerning. But still, I can't bring myself to care about him as a person or
Well,
character.
right. Yeah. He's such a cartoon that they're really not. He is just, he's just there to deliver some jokes and stuff like that. I will say, I won't say that I adopted the Rizzo attitude about this because it wouldn't even go that far. But I did have a job once where part of my job involved we were working in these in this sort of database, and part of my job involved ingesting a certain kind of content. I'm not trying to be weirdly vague; it's just boring. And I had to hit a certain threshold every month, or otherwise they would kind of check in on you and be like, well, why aren't you up here? And I learned that like all I had to do was hit that threshold, and as long as I did that, they never bothered me about anything, right? And so and I still did my work, and I did actually very good work, and I got promoted there and everything else. But it was that I kind of figured it out a couple of months in that I'm like, oh, the only metric anyone is looking at is whether I'm hitting this ingest number. And once I hit this ingest number, which for me was very easy to do because I was focused and it wasn't hard work, they just, I never got bugged by anything. It's so it was, I got it. It's the Rizzo method. It's like I figured it out. Like, okay, as long as you do this, this, and this, they just leave you alone.
Yeah,
And
I mean it's not a bad philosophy at all.
yeah. I didn't sleep under my desk or anything like that, like Rizzo's doing here. So anyway, he tells Klinger, you know, this is what you should do. And of course, Klinger takes that as the opposite because he is saying, I'm going to become the greatest soldier ever. They're going to love me. And Rizzo's like, yeah. And he goes, only then am I going to pull it so I get kicked out. He Rizzo is thinking Klinger is asking for advice on how to stay in but just get away with everything. And Klinger is sort of asking the opposite. So he's sort of taking the plan, but he's going to implement it in his own way. And he takes, and then, to even underscore that how much Rizzo's philosophy works for him, is Klinger so happy, he says, "I'll get somebody else to help me." Whatever, and that allows Rizzo to go back under the Jeep and fall asleep. So he doesn't do anything. So, okay. So then we're later on at night, and Margaret is walking through the compound, and she sees her tent, and the doctors have skinned it, right? It's just, it's the tent, it's the perfect, it's the tent in everything the way it normally looks, except there's just no outside flap. So we see all the insides of Margaret's tent, which is a, I'd say, a fairly tasteful prank, right? It took a little bit of skill and thought to do all that, to just leave everything the way it is. And we see all the red in Margaret's tent and stuff. And so she runs into the swamp and grabs Hawkeye's bunk, and we see there's a skeleton in there, and the three of them are watching the whole time. She grabs a pillow, she starts hitting them with it, which of course makes the pillow fly. Burst open with feathers and stuff. I don't know when feathers stopped being in pillows. I haven't had feathers in my pillow in, I don't know, maybe ever. Like, maybe these are cheap pillows or something, but obviously it's a comedy beat to have the feathers fly, but I've never owned a pillow with feathers in it.
I have, but they're like old. I think they're old Soviet pillows that like my grandmother
Oh,
has.
God.
I
Isn't
mean, the a lot of old Soviet stuff is like very durable, so like grandparents' households will have stuff. Like that's 30 years old, 40 years old. I have in my apartment old like kitchen appliances from my grandmother
Wow.
that some of them still work. So
There's something about you describing something as an old Soviet pillow. It just makes me
well,
laugh. It's just
they're
like
literally that.
created
I
under
don't know how
Khrushchev or something. They're
to
still providing
I
head
feel.
comfort for people these years, decades later.
Yeah, literally, yes.
Yeah. So, they're hitting, Margaret is throwing the pillow around, and the feathers are flying, and we, there's the lighting is in a way that we could sort of see them all floating in there. And then arrives, of course, Colonel Tucker, played by longtime character actor Pat Hingle, born 1924. He passed away in 2009. Had a great career of TV and movies, was in films like Splendor in the Grass, Clint Eastwood's Hang 'Em High. He's in On the Waterfront. Most people below a certain age know him as playing Commissioner Gordon in the four Batman movies from the 90s. He was the him and Michael Gogue, who played Alfred, were like the only actors that went from movie to movie to movie, even though they kept changing Batmans and stuff. It was but Pat Hingle was always Pat Hingle was always Commissioner Gordon. And so he comes in and he is playing it to the hilt. He calls them idiots and stuff like that. And then Potter comes running out in his jammies with his bathrobe. And then he says, of course, he sort of notices Tucker there, and he says, "You, of course, would be Colonel Tucker." And I love the performance of Pat Hingle when he says, "You would have to be Colonel Potter." And then he goes, "My God, Potter, what kind of place are you running here?" It's not that bad what they're doing. Like, he's acting like they were like spilling blood on the floors on the compound or something. It's like they're just throwing a pillow around, but he's going for it.
He's really playing it up. One detail that I only noticed when I rewatched this episode for this show is that this entire scene, Potter is only wearing one slipper, and I have never noticed that.
I didn't
But
notice
he
that.
is he only he's only wearing one slipper, and he's sort of limping when
Yes, he
he walks
is.
out. That's because he only has one slipper on.
Oh, I never
I love
noticed
that.
that. Oh, my God. Great
He
catch.
didn't even have to do that. Like he knew that Tucker is coming. He
Yeah.
just did
Yeah,
it for
that's
the
right. That's
bit.
right. He's doing it, man. He's delivering quite the performance. Yeah, I did not even notice that. That's funny. He just like threw, why would you throw one slipper on? Like, it's like, why would you do that? So Klinger then shows up, dressed in his full, his dress uniform. He's like, "Sir," and he's talking in this very clipped military way, "Sir, your quarters have been prepared with fresh linen, fresh fruit, and fresh air." Also present is a record player complete with five John Philip Sousa albums. It's like, who the hell wants to listen to John Philip Sousa albums as they're trying to go to bed? It's like, what the hell? But it's Americana, so there you go. Now, let me ask you, as a as someone living in Russia, like, do you know who that is? Does John Phillips like who's John Phillips? Why would you know who that is? I mean, it's not a name that most people, anybody in the last 100 years knows.
I mean, I don't know who that is, and I
Okay.
don't think that's ever come up. So,
Okay.
I just, it's just the concept of it is really funny to me when I watch it. Like, I don't know who that is, but like five whole albums, I just kind of sometimes when I do, when I don't look up a cultural reference or a joke, sometimes I just imagine in my head what it could be
Okay. He
to
made j
myself.
for anyone listening who doesn't know who John Philip Sousa is, he was a composer in like the 19th, I think the late 19th or very early 20th century, and he made these marches that were, and he's like the Yankee Doodle Dandy. Like, he wrote that. Like,
Yeah,
that's so
that's.
he's that's what people, you know, and it's he's just became in the early part of the 20th century, he just became synonymous with like patriotic music, kind of big
Yeah.
band sort of stuff. So that's who John Philip Sousa is.
That's kind of what I imagine it is. That I suppose that's something like that. I just
Yeah.
military music.
Yeah, there's a great gag in did you ever watch 30 Rock? Did that show ever make it over to where you are?
I mean, I don't know if it made it over. I'm aware of it. I
Okay.
watched clips, but I haven't seen the whole thing.
There, I absolutely love 30 Rock. I would, if I had all the free time in the world, I would do a 30 Rock podcast, even though the show's been off the air for decades. I still laugh at it today. My wife and I still reference it. But there's an episode where Alec Baldwin's character, Jack Donaghy, invites this
Yeah.
woman over who clearly wants to have sex with him, and for reasons I won't bother to get into, he's trying to not let make that happen, even though she's very attractive and he's attracted to her. And one of the ways that he puts a damper on the evening is that he puts on some John Philip Sousa music. And she just kind of looks at him like, what the hell? And you hear it, it's like, dah, 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 dah. It's like, you know, the least sexy thing possible. So I just love the fact that
mean,
they're still making John Philip Sousa jokes in the early 2000s on the show. So, of course, Potter screams at the doctors. You know, he says, you know, you're a peck of pips, all right. Despite my direct orders, you just had to put be stupid first on your list of things to do today. So yeah, he's screaming at them, and you got to realize how much fun, right? Once you've seen the episode, how much fun it's got to be for Potter to play
Yeah.
this. Right, to know, and I mean the character, I mean obviously Harry Morgan, but I mean the character, to know that he can not go too big when it's going after his doctors, because he is just luring them in further and further and further. And it's just, that had to be, as a character, that had to be so fun to know. And he's red-faced, and he's clenching his fists, and he's like, you know, and then he actually does show a little bit of humanity, where he turns around and he says, "Good grief, Margaret. Where in the name of Harry's corset is your tent?" And she's nodding, like, yeah, see? So that's our act break. So the stakes have been
Yeah.
set.
There's a little detail that Margaret tries to leave for the swamp with the swamp rats. Like she was going to
Yes.
like sleep there or something. I love that.
She just wants to get out of the line of fire from Colonel Potter,
Yeah.
right? Right.
I mean she does have to sleep somewhere. Like they didn't put her tent back,
No,
so
they. They quit where the canvas is somewhere. All that
Yeah.
stuff is somewhere. I gotta go get that. So we're now in the OR, and Klinger is following Tucker around, and he's got his full again. He's got his full. We can see he's got his full uniform on. We see there's like he's got his tie and everything else under his medical scrubs. And the doctors are now being very professional, and they're apologizing, and they're even complimenting each other. Winchester pulls a piece of shrapnel out, and BJ says, you know, "Well done, Winchester." And Winchester's like, you know, "Thank you, Honeycutt. That's some exceptional work." And like, you know, they're really laying it on thick.
Yeah.
And they turn to Tucker for sort of appreciation. And he's like, "What do you want, a medal?" And they're like, "Hey, he just saved this kid's life." And he's like, "Isn't that the general idea, doctor?" Which is not, I mean, yeah, he's a hard ass, but that's not unreasonable, right? He's like, "Well, you're doing your jobs. Okay."
It's like they've always been kind of like resistant to calling themselves heroes or patting themselves on the back for saving these people's lives. So it's not like an unreasonable comment from him, really.
And then, Potter tries to lay it on thick where he says, "We've got a bunch of jokers here, but it comes a surgery there, the real McCoy." And he gives them a sarcastic round of applause. Might be one of the early instances in television history of sarcastic clapping. Because he's like, "Here, doctor, here, here." And he walks out. So then we are in post-op, and Tucker is reviewing the patients, and he starts asking about the medications for one patient, and Hawkeye sort of jumps in. He says, "This is my patient. If you have any questions, ask me." And they really start getting into it with one another, and they all surround him, and they kind of object to the way he's handling things. And he tells Winchester, "Better keep your mouth shut." And then Margaret says, "I know you're just trying to do whatever you're doing, a very difficult job." And he says, "Don't patronize me, Major." And she says, "I was trying to support you." And he goes, "I hardly need the support of a woman."
That's crazy.
That's the one where you're like, "Whoa, okay, we have now crossed." And Margaret's literally with face. I have it paused here as I'm watching it. She's around the same thing. And it is like, okay, he's now crossed over into supervillain territory because that's completely unprofessional and just being a giant dick.
Yeah, I do appreciate that they're like using a character being misogynistic as a way to make him look really unlikable. I feel like that's for the show and for the time weirdly commendable that he's not like they're not treating it as like, well, he's kinda right. Like that's they're treating it as like it's actually bad, which it
Yeah.
is.
Yeah, they're not helping their case at all, but once he says that, you realize, "Oh, okay, we're now okay with them going all in on this guy because he's terrible." He's again, and also just unprofessional. Like that's for a guy who has been set up to be a stickler, right? He follows military regulation. You're like, "Well, that's not acceptable to do." I'm sure things are not great for Margaret or any woman in the army in 1952, but I'm sure that wasn't in the regulation either. So we know that he has now, for someone who supposedly is following regulations so precisely, he's now gone outside the bounds of acceptable behavior by saying that to her. So okay, he is now our villain. We've got 10 minutes left in this episode. He is our villain. And so they go out to the compound and he threatens them all. And he says, basically, "I'm going to have you all put up. I'm going to shape, play, get this place shape up, and I can't wait. Better way to start than barring you all from medical service." And he says, "I'm going to send you all up for court martial, and since I'm the one who decides that, I always get my way." Now, this is an episode we all know watching the show. Our heroes are not going to get court martialed and thrown out of the 47th. We know it's not going to happen. But it is kind of
I feel
like,
like
what do you really think you're going to boot the whole staff? We have a 98% approval rating. Dude, do your worst, buddy. Come on.
it's very that, and it's the first time when I watched it, and I think like every time I rewatched it, it always felt a little bit weird to me that they're taking his threats so seriously because we've had like multiple times when basically the gist of a previous episode was that someone wants to break up the 4077th, or there's just like this strict military official that's coming, and they always think that like the doctors are incompetent and buffoons and whatever else, and like the fact that they're actually really good at their jobs is what saves them every time. So it's always felt weird to me that now we're taking this seriously, and I feel like that it would be a completely different episode, but I feel like if there ever was an episode that actually goes into like what if there was a military official who is that strict, who actually does not care how good of how good of work they do, and like he still wants to punish them just for them being stupid.
Yeah, it's all a power thing, right? It's not about really making the unit right. But you do have to figure that the doctors would say, we have a 98%. There's no way this guy's going to be able to pull this off. This guy can't possibly have that much pull that he is going to, like, based on what? A pillow fight? What did we do? You know, like, what are you talking about? So, okay. But again, it's an episode of the show. We don't have to take this too terribly seriously. So, Tucker shows up to talk to Klinger, and now Klinger has pulled the switcheroo where he is in his Cleopatra uniform, which is kind of amazing to think. First of all, where did he even get that? And second, he's had it. Where has he been keeping it all this time, right? Because it's where does he keep his clothes anyway, by the way? Where does Klinger keep his clothes?
I mean, he has a closet. I think they showed it one time, like in his tent.
Yeah, but where does he
Didn't
have it
they?
ever since he became
Oh yeah.
company clerk? Where are all these clothes?
That's always like that's always surprises me that he sort of got promoted, but he now has less privacy.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I mean, that's what they deal with in that earlier episode in the season where he tries to put up all the stuff from home, and he can't do it because they're like, well, this is an official space. This is not even a remotely private space. But yeah, you got to wonder where does he keep, because I mean, we know that Klinger has a Foot Locker, and Klinger, that's where his fatigues are. But like, he doesn't have room for this outfit with the metal cones for his boobs and stuff like that, and the asp on the asp headband and stuff like that. So, by the way, it's just kind of funny. Just a couple, like a week ago, I watched the Elizabeth Taylor version of Cleopatra, all 4 hours of it, strangely enough. So now it was a lot of Cleopatra lately. So Klinger's pretending that he doesn't know that he's wearing this outfit. And Tucker sort of taking it seriously, and he says, you know, good Lord, the only good man here, and they've broken you. And he sits him down like they're almost going to do like a patient psychiatry session, because he lays him down, and you know, and then Potter walks in, and he's like, what the hell is this? And Klinger's like, all hail mighty Caesar. And then Le Potter says, you look like a furry Claudette Colbert, which is funny to me. I also like the way he purposely says her name wrong. Her name is Claudette Colbert, but he says Claudette Colbert, which of course that's just part of the Potter way of doing it. And I mentioned this on other episodes. I always love it when they give Harry Morgan a reference to an actress. Of course, he would be from his generation because he's familiar with Claudette Colbert, who was in movies in the silent era and worked all the way into like the 60s. But I also think like Harry Morgan might know her in real life. Like he might have known her because he worked with a lot of these people. So I always thought that was, I think it was the last reunion special. Not the last one, the one that was there a couple years ago, but the bigger one, the 30th one with them all there. I think Harry Morgan even tells a story about that when MASH was on, they mentioned one old actress and he knew her and he ran into her and she said, oh, I laughed so hard I peed my pants because she heard her name on MASH. You know, I thought that was great.
That's
So,
actually lovely.
yeah, it is, right? It's sweet, right? To know that, like, oh, this is my old friend. Because it's funny, you watch you know, I watch a lot of older movies for my own entertainment, for my other podcasts.
Same.
I'm like, Harry Morgan will pop up and stuff, and you're like, oh yeah, there he is. There's Colonel Potter, you know, and stuff like that. So he was just in a Elvis movie that I watched a couple of months ago. I'm like, there he is with Elvis Presley, for Pete's sakes. It's amazing.
It's the thought of like older and older Hollywood actors watching MASH to me is so weird. It's like it's two different worlds, but the fact that they actually could watch MASH is kind of crazy.
It's a great idea, right? I mean, you think about that, like a lot of them were still around in the 70s and into the early 80s. They didn't really start kind of fading away until later. But like, so yeah, a lot of these people were still around. It could be, you know, MASH was watched by 30 million people. I mean, it made sense, right? You could see that a lot of these old, you could be Katharine Hepburn kicking back and watching
Oh
an
my God,
episode
do
of
not
MASH.
that image just brought a lot of joy to me.
It'd be fantastic. So, Potter gets into this argument with Tucker. He says, come on, Come on, Colonel, let's discuss this. And they run off into Potter's office, and then they cut. Now, of course, we realize that, they're laughing uncontrollably off screen, right? Because this is all going to plan so perfectly, but we don't know any of that. So then we're back to the swamp, and we see Hawkeye and BJ are knitting, which is kind of a fun little detail. There's a nice little pop of red in the frame here. Margaret is there with them, and they are all plotting. And they're saying, well, first of all, Winchester is against it. And then he finally says, no, how do we nail this one? Because they decide, look, if he's going to punish us, if he's going to go this far, let's do something worthy of the punishment, which is a very juvenile approach to take. But of course, that's exactly what Potter and Tucker are betting on. And as he says, they're falling for it. So there you go.
I'm on their side. I don't care. I feel like I would have done the same thing. He kind of deserved that too.
After the woman comment, how do you not,
Yeah. I
right
mean,
at that point?
the entire time he was like playing it up, I think the only more or less reasonable thing he said was about what do you want a medal? And the rest is just like so ridiculously uptight that like I wouldn't feel bad for him.
Yeah, I do love Winchester's observation where he talks about they might all be sent to Leavenworth. And then he goes, oh my
Oh
God,
my
that's
God,
in
that's in
Kansas.
Kansas. I have it in my
The
notes. I love that.
horror of Winchester having to go to Kansas. That's just more than he can contemplate. That's a great little detail. So then we cut to the O Club, and everyone is the four doctors are at the bar. They purposely grab Rizzo asleep. And wake him up and pull him away from the specific table they want him to sit him at. And even they wake him up long enough for him to say, oh, I could use a break. So he kind of just disappears into the frame, out of the frame. And they sit, Potter and Tucker sit down. Now, how they were able to know which seat Tucker would take, that I don't know, right? How would you know? Because if Potter sat in that chair, they would be out of luck. But okay, again, we're not supposed to take this too terribly seriously. By the way, I like in the background, we see Rizzo at another table with a nurse and one of the orderlies, and he's sleeping at their table. So I love that they're just ignoring him as he's laying there just fully asleep. So they call Potter, he gets up, and BJ says, something's come up. And he says, Potter's like, what? He says, Tucker's number. And Potter's like, what? And so the bartender Roy brings the shot, and Tucker always orders a shot and a beer. That's a recurring thing. He always talks about how he's going to get his typical shot and a beer, and he starts yelling, "Where's my beer? Where's my beer?" Hawkeye says, "Beer's on you, Colonel," and they pour the bucket down, and more beer falls on him that could possibly fit into that one little bucket, right? There's no way there's that much beer. It's clearly a stagehand on the top in the rafters, dumping tons of liquid onto a Pat Hingle there. But okay, fine. So he gets up and he's covered in beer and he starts screaming and he's like yelling and we could see like spittle is coming out. Now, one thing that's kind of funny about this scene is as we're watching Tucker get up and scream, he's slightly out of focus. He's a little bit out of focus. And I don't think that's on purpose. I just think that's what it was a mistake. I think they got it and they didn't quite. He was maybe moving, maybe because he had liquid in his eye. He didn't hit his mark exactly where they told him, but he's just slightly out of focus. And I actually think it gives the scene like some neat verisimilitude, right? It feels weird and ragged. And you're like, oh, this guy's. Because he is screaming. I mean, Hingle is red-faced and he does the whole thing, and then he does the mouth agape when he has the open, and he really plays up. He lays on the bar, he knocks all the beer over, like he's really, really playing it up, and then he falls onto the floor. Hawkeye tries to help. Potter, but how Potter does not start to laugh at this point, because he gets to say, get away, Pierce. Haven't you done enough? Which is like,
That's so dramatic for no reason.
like, there's no Potter would never say that to Hawkeye. They're trying to save the guy's life. He would not be like, no, get away. Haven't you done enough? Like, it's just like, oh my God, come on. But again, if you're watching this for the first time, you're like, what the hell is happening? So he asks for Hawkeye and he says, Pierce, is that you, Pierce? And Hawkeye's, yeah, what is it? And then he all of a sudden sort of looks very different and he says, April Fools. And Hawkeye goes, what? And then Harry Morgan lets loose the most unsettling laugh. He sounds like a donkey when he like a braying donkey. He is yelling so loud he almost fries the mic. How hardly he laughs. It's a very to me, it's a slightly unsettling laugh the way Potter laughs.
I mean, I haven't noticed, but I just thought that like I feel like that fits the scene. I just
Yeah.
it's a very natural laugh.
It's genuine, but it's just to me, it's like some people's laughs are just a little weird, and his is like, it's like that loud. I'm like, oh my God. It's just a weird, it's a very discordant sound. So of course Tucker gets up and they start jumping around and laughing, and Potter says, we got you, we got you, we got you. We even got that Harry Cuckoo. He thinks he's got his Section 8. He's really crazy. And then he says, you were marvelous, Dan, a regular Lionel Barrymore. Again, another person that maybe Harry Morgan knew, Lionel Barrymore. And then Tucker starts doing he said, well, the Potter says, I love that line. What do you want, a medal? And Tucker starts doing is like shooting fish in a barrel. You want to step outside for a little four-letter word? Like, they're like little kids. They're jumping up and down. It's really charming to see these old guys just absolutely lose it. And BJ says, this was always, this was a plot. And Potter says, yeah, we planned this weeks ago. I knew if Dan pushed you hard enough, you'd pull a stupid trick like this. You all fell one for it like a school of hungry carp. And I like in the background, we see Nurse Kelly laughing at this. She's watching what's happening.
Genuinely good for her.
Yeah. And they all go like I liked it. I mean, look, we're down to the last minute of the episode. There's not much room for anything else. But I like that the four doctors just have a good laugh, right? They're not
Yeah, I
offended.
mean,
They're like, hey, we went for it and we have been outplayed this whole time. You gotta respect the hustle there. It's a fun ending.
I mean, it's kind of like I don't want to say cruel, but like it is a bit over the top to pretend that he had a heart attack, even though it was like barely a second of that. But still, like I wouldn't blame them for being shaken after that. So the fact that like they took it in stride is really nice to me.
Yeah, they didn't let it go on too long, right? I mean, obviously you couldn't do that because of the episode. We're down to, like I said, we're down to the last minute. But you could they didn't it wasn't like they go get a stretcher. I mean, they had to cut it off before any of the doctors would like go get medicine or start pumping, hitting his chest, something serious. So they managed to pull it just long enough to send a jolt of adrenaline through the four of them and be terrified of what they've done, but not let it go on too long. And so it's a really funny ending. So then we come back for the bumper, and Tucker is now kind of in different clothes, obviously, because his other ones were covered in beer and his hair was all slicked back. And they start telling stories, some reminiscences from the Young Sherman Potter Chronicles show, which, maybe someday that somebody could make, talking about how they've been pulling these gags since three wars now, and even mentioned one time they slipped rubber hamburgers into the chow line, and they says the problem was that nobody noticed. And everyone's just having a good time. There is no Father Mulcahy, as you pointed out. He only has one scene in this whole episode, even though it's the season finale. It's why? Why couldn't Mulcahy be in the scene? I don't understand. So then Klinger walks in dressed in his Cleopatra outfit, which makes everyone scream with laughter. We zoom in on him and he says, "What's so funny?" And that is the end of the episode and the season. So that is April Fool's, everybody. As a season finale, it's pretty pretty low stakes, right? It's not
Yeah.
Margaret's marriage or Abyssinian or anything. It's just another episode, but it's a genuinely funny one, and it does have some bit of tension. So, not too bad overall as season finales go.
Yeah, it doesn't really strike me as a proper season finale for sure. It's just like an episode.
Yeah,
Could
they,
go anywhere.
yeah, I mean, like last season, the last one was The Party, which
Yeah.
was a little bit kind, it had a little bit of a different thing to it. So I could, but yeah, this is just, you could have slotted this episode in any part during these. Obviously, it's April, they had to want to make, they,
Yeah.
I'm sure they built it because it was going to air in April or the end of March to be timing. But yeah, it is just like an episode and then there's the season. So do you have a favorite line or joke from this episode, Vanya?
Yes, I do. And well, I have two, and both of them are by Charles, because I feel like David Ogden Stiers does a really great job in this episode, and I feel like that goes slightly unnoticed because it's very much Harry Morgan's episode. But I love all the noises he does. I genuinely, like a year or two ago, compiled a lot of the funny noises that Charles does into a single video. I love his noise work. It's great. But he has two lines. The first one is like, it's kind of low key, but he says "loud and or clear, sir," when Potter is asking him like, "Did you hear all that?" I just
Did you
love that
write?
he's,
Are you hearing my instructions? Yeah.
yeah, he like specifies "and or clear." That's just, it's low key, but I like that so much. And the first one, my absolute favorite is that they were alive when I put them there. You killed them. The way he said, "You killed
They're
them."
so offended, right?
Yeah,
Like
he is so offended. Yes, but it's a really weird episode to me, like in my personal opinion, in my personal ranking of MASH episodes. I feel like it's kind of a weird one. In that it's really funny and I appreciate it, but also I kind of wish that it went in a slightly different direction.
Regarding David Ogden Stiers, it is. I mean, look, everyone on MASH was great. That's what made the show so great, is that
Yeah.
the entire cast was great. But he had a really, he had a particular facility with language,
Yes,
the actor
yes.
and the which fit the character perfectly well. Which is then strange to me that while David Ogden Stiers had a perfectly fine career post MASH. He worked all the way up until his death. He did a lot of voice work. He did a lot. I mean, like, no, he did just fine. He did not do a ton of comedy after MASH. And that is always seems strange to me because he was able, and we've this season, I mean, every season since he's been on, but this season, I think especially, it's come up a lot. He was able to wring extra layers of comedy out of a line he was given.
Yeah.
If the line was funny, he made it extra funny. If the line wasn't particularly funny, he could make it interesting. Like you just pointed out, the loud and or clear. Like you
Yeah.
could deliver that in a very perfunctory way, loud and or clear. But he said it in a way that made it funny. Like kind of like earlier in the season, the Mr. and Mrs. Who. Where he's asking, where he's like, I have one personal question. What is your name? That thing.
Yes.
He was able to really wring every ounce of comedy out of a
Yeah.
line he was given. And it's just a shame that he didn't get a chance, I think, to do that as much in the 30 years he kept working post-MASH.
Yeah, I feel like that is really a shame, because he really humanizes just his characters, and the way he speaks, like as Charles, is maybe half the charm of Charles. So I feel like maybe they didn't know what to do with him, because I feel like he's the type of actor who could be typecast in a way, even though he brings so much flavor to each character, even if they're like the same type. So I feel like maybe he was trying to avoid that, or his agents were trying to avoid that. I genuinely don't know, but it is a shame that he hadn't done more
Yeah.
movies.
I mean, I made a similar observation over on Cheerscast, which is part of the network here, where Kelsey Grammer was like that. Kelsey Grammer, no matter what you handed him on Cheers, he could make it funny. Whether it was he was in an episode where he got two lines, or he was on an episode where he was the focus, he always smacked it out of the park, which is why, of course, they went to him for a spinoff. There's a reason why he headlined his own spinoff that ran just as long as Cheers ever did. He just had that facility. And obviously, it's funny enough, David Ogden Stiers was on an episode of Frasier at one point. But he has that, he's kind of like the, or, you know, that version of Kelsey Grammer. This is kind of like egghead, erudite, great with language. But yeah, he's able to, like the way he says the whole thing about, you know, we're going to go to Leavenworth. Pause. Oh my God, that's in Kansas. The horror, right? Just the horror that he realizes that what that would mean. So my favorite line isn't anything related to that. It's the John Philip Sousa thing. That just makes me laugh, the five John Philip Sousa albums. But yeah, Stiers, and it's interesting that in the Complete Book of MASH by Susie Coulter, which is, you know, for many years like the tome on the book, there's a There's interviews with each of the cast, and Harry Morgan talks about that in his mind, he could have done MASH forever. He found it so fun and so rewarding that he said, I could have just done it forever. But he specifically says in the interview, Alan, Mike, Loretta, and David said they had had enough. And I always found that to be interesting. Now, Alan and Loretta, that you could see, right? Because they've been doing it for 11 years. And Mike had been doing it for seven. But David was still sort of new-ish. That's interesting to me that he was one of the ones that was like, nah, I think I'm good with
I
this. And
mean,
that's interesting.
he also called MASH the Green Show and did not like to talk about it
Oh, really?
afterwards. Yes, I do not remember where I read that. I think it was either a biography or an interview, but like he did not like to talk about MASH afterwards, and he didn't like the Green Show. And it's not because he didn't like MASH as an experience or as a show, but he's just a private person, and he like treasured the memories of that. But also, it's such a popular show. It's the popular show of the time. So I think he didn't want it to eclipse him. Like, he wanted to be more than just the Green Show in a
Interesting.
way. So maybe that's also the reason why he didn't do as much comedy. I don't know. I'm
Yeah, could be, right?
not an expert.
Could be. It could be. I mean, I'm glad. I mean, he's in all the reunion shows, and you know, and he made appearances when they would do. There were still MASH units in various parts of the world up until not all that long ago, and they would occasionally have MASH actors appear at them when they were being where there was some commemorative thing, and he was at some of those. So obviously he came around, sort of like maybe it was just the initial bunch of years afterwards. And you know, he does have an appearance on, we don't mean to turn this episode into the David Ogden Stiers biography, but
I
nevertheless
mean, I could.
he was but he was on an episode of Star Trek Next Generation. And if you look closely, at one point when he's leaning over a control panel, they have put a on the control panel, there's a series of numbers and it says 4077 on the control panel. So obviously, you know, like if he was really prickly about it, they probably would not have done that. So I'm guessing that by the time he was on Next Gen, enough time had passed and his career had kept going in a way that he wasn't worried about only being known for being MASH, that he could then joke about it at that point. You know, they could
Yeah,
have that gag and
probably.
stuff. So, but anyway, so yeah, that's the end of the season, everybody. It's been a long ride. It's the longest. Other seasons have been 25, but there won't be any more after this. The remaining seasons are considerably shorter. So this is the longest run we've had of the season. So Vanya, thank you so much for coming back. I had a great time talking to you when you were on season seven with the Lil episode, and I was really looking forward to this. So thank you for wrapping up the season with me.
Thank you for calling me. Thank you for asking. I'm always happy to come here. It's
Great.
such a joy.
Awesome. Awesome. So as I said, I will see you over on Mash Blur. In the meantime, thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, FineWaterPodcast.com. You can find me on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, of which MashCast is a part, you can go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Adam Ackerman, Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K, Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P, Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Rob Riley, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. So we will be back in 2 weeks for the annual mail call episode, where we'll talk about I'll rank the episodes of the season. We'll read your comments over the course of season 8, and we'll get into the announcement about season 9. So that'll be in 2 weeks. But until then, that is all.
Sir, I must protest the rash of mindless pranks being perpetrated around here.
Good morning, Padre, or should I say Padres?
Colonel, there's no humor in this. While I was showering, somebody stole my robe and left me this house frock.
Better not take it off, Father. You'll be a defrocked priest.
Klinger, how would you like to get the last rites and a few lefts?
Holster thy knuckles, Padre. This too shall pass.
Get better. Oh, shut up!